following are the words of Noel DiGirolamo, president of the Suffolk County Police Benevolent Association.
Police officers are already being targeted for assassination. Releasing their personal information to criminals will only further endanger them. Stand with law enforcement. Defend the police.
Your Island, live and local, with your host, Tom Shalero, on 103.9 LI News Radio.
And once again, welcome back as we're moving right along on our Monday edition. I'll tell you a lot going on. And as we do on a regular basis, we have the great Dr. Rajiv Fernando joining us. And I gave him, I actually sent a text message to him today to see if he'd come on and just talk about an international, what I'm going to call an international horrific crisis. And I was very much taken aback by the news reports coming out of India. And I wanted to ask the doc a few questions about that. Dr. Fernando, how are you, my friend?
Nice to talk to you, but I wish the circumstances were a little bit better, Tom. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Look, I love the fact that I'm a humanitarian, because I watched what I saw going on in India right now. And we're starting to, I heard that now New York State is going to reopen on May 19th. People are walking out. They're feeling better. People are smiling more. We've come through this national nightmare of COVID-19. It started, you came on the show and you made people feel better that we're going to get through this. You talked about the mask. Everybody knows the history of the last 13, 14 months. And then we see India. And then we'll see what's going on there. And what got me today, which sparked my phone call, is that there are people choking to death over there because they don't have respirators. In the third decade of the 21st century, in a world community where there is so much that have been effort to this right now, and I believe India is the second most populous country on the planet, what is going on? Is it bad government? Is it bad medicine? Is what, you know, it doesn't make much sense to me because they are a close ally of the United States. Dr. Fernando.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned a couple of the highlights. Whenever something like this happens, it's usually what we call the multifactorial situation. So here, clearly, one of the things that I feel is driving the pandemic really is India, actually, a few months ago in February, actually declared victory from COVID-19, which I don't think is a good thing to do. They declared this in February. Since then, there's been no social distancing. The government have organized numerous political rallies because it's an election year, and no masks and people socializing. And this is what's really happened. And you mentioned the point of respirators, but let me tell you how bad it is. You can't even get an oxygen tank over there. So this is dying without any dignity whatsoever. There's no oxygen. People are just dying in their homes, on the streets, just outside hospitals, waiting to get a hospital bed. And that's the way they're dying, without any dignity whatsoever. The black market has taken advantage of the situation. And they're selling a drug like remdesivir, which usually costs about, let's put in U.S. dollars, about $50 or so. They're being sold at $1,000. Oxygen cylinders are sold usually $80. They're now sold at close to $1,400. Oxygen concentrators. Everything is a huge black market, and people are paying thousands and thousands of dollars to secure a bed. Which unfortunately means people, maybe the wealthier people, are just buying off a hospital bed and just saying, well, I want to be sure, let me just be in the hospital. And they purchase these beds, unfortunately leaving the more vulnerable people who really have nothing, absolutely nothing. And people who should be admitted to the hospital, they're not. Dire, dire straits. It's a huge country, so people travel sometimes for 1 to 2 days across the nation to find a hospital bed. And many of them die during the journey as well.
humanitarian crisis that's beyond belief. You know, when you think about it, here the world I thought was breathing a little easier, and then this pops onto the scene. Now, you did educate me, because I didn't realize that the government of India said, okay, all clear, so to speak. Let's go to political rallies and so on. So you could assign, not that it matters to the poor people that are sick and dying over there, but you could assign some sort of blame. And a lot of this has to do with the governing agencies. Even in this country, we had to look towards the American government for guidance to get this thing in gear, Operation Warp Speed and so on, the vaccination program that's taking place, all of that. So that, again, is an accurate statement to say that there's some culpability on the behalf of the government over there in India.
Yeah, you know, and they actually did accept ownership for this, because it was blatantly obvious that, you know, they just, you know, they put their election goals in front of humanity, and that's really what happened. So this is an unbelievable catastrophe. I really would be there on the ground serving right now. The only issue is, you know, I won't be able to come back to the United States because they blocked flights there. So I'm going to have to, you know, obviously I follow the rules with us. So yeah, it's terrible to be so far and not be able to treat. And, you know, it's very difficult being at home. We did that in Mexico City with the Red Cross. We would just go home. So many people were on oxygen at home, and we just titrate the oxygen in unbelievable situations. Like, it doesn't even happen in the States. But here, once again, the government has just asked the people to buy oxygen. So people are just, the regular man is just going all over the place trying to find oxygen. So it's very dire. I know the United States has done a wonderful job. Like you said, we're allies, and they're delivering oxygen, and they're putting in millions of dollars of funding to get supplies to them. So I'm very proud of our approach. But the questions, like I had mentioned, is I think India, which I had predicted a couple of about a week ago, that they will definitely become the number one country on earth with COVID-19. They will blow past the United States for the most number of cases in the world and the most number of deaths. And this doesn't seem like it's going away anywhere. As we've done a brilliant job with our vaccinations, but for India, it's you know, only about 3-4% of people in the adults. So it's about 960 million adults. Out of that, only 2-3% have been vaccinated. So this is a long, 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 long battle, actually, that we're going to face.
You're just joining us with Dr. Rajiv Fernando, a regular contributor to our program, as he has been for over a year, talking about this pandemic that all of us are somewhat breathing a little easier. But looking over in India right now, we could only sit there and shake our heads and say, well, what can we do? And I do want to make this known that Dr. Fernando has spent a lot of time going to other countries and helping out there unselfishly. And as he just said, and I'm going to repeat what you just said, Doc, is that if it weren't for the restrictions, that you would be there. Which brings us up to the next question about bringing in the International Red Cross. And I know they must be on the ground there, or Doctors Without Borders and so on. What is the international community going to be involved in something like this? Because this could spiral out of control. And as you know, this thing doesn't stay confined to a political subdivision like a country. We saw that when you first reported to us from the Wuhan province in China, that this thing moves and it could resurge again. Doc?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, these are the kind of things that I always want to mention during my talks. This is a pandemic, and the sooner we understand that, the better it is. So when the U.S. is doing great, like what we've done, full marks to our population, you know, most of them out there, they're going out there, getting the vaccines, you know, wearing masks. They're great. But, you know, when other countries start to suffer, remember, everything is just a flight away. You know, we do know our vaccines cover the Brazil strain, the UK strain, and to a certain degree, the South Africa strain. But there's very little known about the mutations in India, which they're still starting to study. So everything is a flight away. And, you know, it's very humbling that after all this work that's been done in the States, you know, anything can just spoil the party. So, you know, it's very troubling times when the rest of the world, when you have countries like, you know, the biggest economies in the world, like India, Brazil, all struggling, you know, it's worrisome for us also. And you know, people have been talking about herd immunity for a while, and I personally, I've always mentioned over the last few months, it's going to be very difficult for the United States to obtain herd immunity. There's still a lot of vaccination hesitancy. Unfortunately, you know, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, I thought, is a really good vaccine, but I feel, you know, the government had paused it for, I feel, a little bit too long. You know, they stopped the administration and said, you know, we need some time to study the vaccine and to recommend to doctors how to manage it, which I thought was fantastic. If you get these clots, which is fantastic, great education for the healthcare people. But I feel they held it for too long. And by the time they reintroduced this vaccine, you know, more and more people don't want to get it. The last count I saw was, you know, closing in on 80% of Americans, if offered the J&J vaccine, won't get it. The other troubling feature for us, Tom, is, you know, close to 10% of people don't go back for their second dose. So for the reasons I just mentioned, I think it's going to be very hard to actually get to that figure, which of anywhere between 75-80% to get herd immunity. So when a certain portion of the country remains unvaccinated, you know, they're always at risk for spreading COVID more and more. So, you know, the in New York, of course, now we can walk around without masks for people who've been vaccinated. But how do we know these people? That's the thing, right? Like when we're walking in the street without a mask, are we stopping each other and saying, hey, were you vaccinated or not? So I'm not really happy the way that policy came out, because it's virtually impossible to stop someone in the street and say, hey, this is New York. We're running around. It's, you know, time is off the essence. Who's going to stop someone and say, hey, show me your vaccination card, you know? So there's still a lot of things which have been imperfect. Definitely the cases in New York are, you know, so low. We're doing wonderful over here. And I really think it is time to open up. But like I've always mentioned in our talks before, we should be in a position to say, hey, we tried to open up, things didn't work, we got to close back again. And it's very sad, but that is the state of the world today, you know, and it's for all of us to stay safe. And, you know, we're sending our love and prayers to India today. You know, it's just on India. We're starting to see the surrounding countries, Nepal, Sri Lanka, Pakistan. So all the cases are going up over there also. So this is far from over. And, you know, I still advocate, you know, whenever you feel the situation is risky, wear a mask. Forget about what the CDC says. If you're in a situation and you feel the situation is risky, that someone can pose a threat or someone hasn't been vaccinated, put your mask on. Remember, these are guidelines, what they say. And guidelines are meant to guide us, but they don't guide us to every single situation that can happen.
The medical profession has been so absolutely fantastic during this whole time. There is a thought out there now, and one of my listeners actually wrote in, knowing that you were coming on the program today, because I announced it earlier, is there a talk about vaxxed versus unvaxxed sections. In other words, you go to a public place, and if you're vaccinated, that's, you can go to a section, and that you don't have to wear a mask or anything like that, versus the unvaxxed sections. Is that? Do you think that's actually pushing it too far? Because are we trying to stigmatize that population that is opposed to it? Look, I've spoken to a lot of people that saying, Tom, no way in hell am I getting this vaccination. And I'm trying to say, listen, I think it's safe. I did it. I got both my shots, and I feel good about myself about doing it. So we're trying to set that example. You are doing it phenomenally, because you come on the program and you say, get the damn vaccination and stop, you know, messing around here. But there is a certain segment. But what do you think that whole idea of a vax section versus an unvax section?
I think that's a really, unfortunately, this is really what's going to happen. You know, ideas like this are going to keep popping up, because you know, here's the thing between a vaxxer and an anti-vaxxer. I mean, the obvious problem over here is your inability to appreciate science or believe in science. And that's a huge problem. That's one thing. But the other thing is to stigmatize these Americans might be pushing it a little bit. So now we're already seeing people, colleges saying, hey, we want your vaccination cards, otherwise we're not sending you in. Or countries to travel all over the world, they're going to want a vaccine card. And certainly people who are walking around in public who have been vaccinated, they want to make sure that, you know, the unvaccinated people are not walking around too. So this is it's a troubling time. Like, I don't mean to stigmatize these people. It's unfortunate. I say, well, you don't appreciate science or you don't believe in it after all this proof and data, there's nothing else I can do. I'll try. The only reason I will try talking is because I'm in the healthcare work, and I'll try to convince. But some people just don't want to listen. And these people are definitely going to be marginalized. Watch, I'm so sorry to say that, but, you know, these are situations that are going to come up, like for jobs, employment, colleges, traveling. Everyone is going to ask for this vaccine card. This is the more and more, let's say, someday, let's say you want to travel to Brazil and you want to come back. So let's say you go to Brazil and or you have to produce, and let's say you're coming back to the States, you have to produce a vaccination card. This is all inevitable. It's a matter of time before it's actually put into place. Experts have been talking about this for months now, but it's a matter of time before this comes into place, and they're going to be really stigmatized over here. So I'd like to put that into perspective with them. There's really no way out. They will be stigmatized. You know, we do know the flu vaccine is mandatory for hospital workers, but this is really the amount of death and destruction the planet has gone through. This vaccine card is really going to come to the forefront.
Before I let you go, should there be some sort of a ruling that on the international community to allow doctors such as yourself the free access to, if you so choose, to go to India to help out there, send the ability to travel back and forth? It almost seems like it's almost counterproductive to get many of these wonderful, wonderful doctors such as yourself who want to help, who will go anywhere on this globe to help because you've taken that oath and that's your belief and your passion and the hope that things can get better. Should there be something to at least allow free access by our medical community into India?
Yeah, I'm sure there is things of this which are evolving. India lacks infectious disease experts. To me, very frank with you, in India, the internal medicine or the general medical doctors have such good knowledge of infectious disease that the specialty really doesn't exist over there. It's just evolving as a specialist, but the general medical doctors are very good in infectious disease. And we're appealing. And for example, I'm on a committee. We're writing to the president and to the vice president at the World Trade Organization, which is on Wednesday, to allow more vaccination equity. Like I said, we have millions of doses. Like I've mentioned before, Tom, that we are going to have many more doses. We're going to have an excess, and we're going to have a surplus of vaccines. And I think for the United States to, you know, get back onto the global front as a world leader, I think these things are very important, where you reach out to the president and the vice president, and we're able to vaccinate the rest of the world. So I'm very excited. I think a lot of good things are coming up. And I thank all of you for listening. And all of you, be careful. Remember, when you're outside and even though you're vaccinated, if you have high-risk situations, remember, the CDC puts out guidelines, but you're the person who makes the final decision. So make that decision and be safe.
Once again, Dr. Rajiv Fernando, one of our contributors to this program, helping us out during this tough times of the pandemic. So just briefing us a little bit on the horrific situation currently occurring in India. Doc, you have a great day, and thanks for calling on.
It's an honor to help humanity, and stay safe, Long Island. Thank you so much. Bye.
Okay, a couple of minutes left. We could take one or two phone calls, 631-451-1039. When is it all going to end? It's incredible that just when we think it's moving out, we see what's happening in India right now. But as far as the United States is concerned, we're moving in the right direction. They have, as the doctors point out, though, there is a segment of our population that has been resistant to the vaccination. And again, being the United States of America, we have the right to do a lot, and we have a right not to be vaccinated, and that's a segment of our population. The question is, will that number not allow us to reach the herd immunity that we so seek? And, you know, again, people have their own rights, and they have a right to do that, but at the same time, it was a great effort on the part of this country and our medical science and our labs to produce a vaccination such as what we have between Pfizer and Moderna, and I guess I'm going to say Johnson & Johnson, and people may get mad at me because there was a number of instances that there was I point to one death as a result of it. But at the same time, if you look at the number of people getting Pfizer and Moderna in the millions, many millions, and the minimal side effects that occurred as a result of it, one would say that it was pretty incredible that they did this in less than 10 months, come out with a vaccination like this. It started to get into the arms of Americans in December. the COVID-19 crisis started in March. Around March is when we started to see businesses and schools and everything closing down. So pretty incredible when you think about the science behind something like this, and to have the relative success, and I'm going to say overwhelming success that is taking place right now. And hopefully within the next 60 to 90 days, we will see such a drop in this country of the number of people that are contracting this insidious virus. Has it affected us all? And that's our Monday edition. It's a wrap, ladies and gentlemen. 2 o'clock hours upon us, breaking it down to Great Franklin K coming up next. I'm your host, Tom Shalero. Thanks for joining us. See everybody tomorrow.
Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today. I want to be part of it. New York, New York. These vagabond shoes are longing to stray right through.